Good afternoon to all listeners. I'm Gabriel Kamanzouli and we'll be conducting today's program, It's Debatable. This is a weekly discussion of current affairs in its second series. The program is run by the Department of International Relations. Today's subject is whether Western media industries are means of cultural imperialism. Today's students are Christiana Farrugia from Gozo, Yung Jingji from China, Yuan Do from Japan, and Anya Hansen from Denmark. We have also a guest speaker here in the studio, which is Dr. Brenda Murphy. Dr. Carmen Samut will introduce today's subject.
Whenever we discuss the significance of the information society, we are aware that information is a key determinant of power. The possession of information capital is not merely an important means of wealth creation. It also implies significant political control over world affairs. The issue of the so-called CNN effect led to research about the extent of media influence on international affairs. While debates differ on the degree of media power, it is commonly acknowledged that the media are central for democratic practice. A democratic information society necessitates informed publics. It requires people who are able to deliberate rationally on political and economic processes. It also necessitates political and cultural participation and citizens that are capable of self-expression. Given these considerations, the magnitude of media use and their centrality in everyday life has led to concerns over the Western dominance over the global information flow. During the Cold War, for instance, these anxieties were voiced very vociferously within UNESCO. Then, newly independent developing nations felt that the media did not represent their aspirations and realities. On the contrary, the media either presented the angles and interests of their former colonizers or of the two superpowers. This, they claimed, led to a socio-technological imbalance and to a one-way flow of information from the center to the periphery. The McBride Commission was established to study problems of communication. In 1980, it submitted its report to UNESCO, a seminal document that provided the intellectual justification for the so-called New Information and Communication World Order. Although it initially gained support, the UNESCO endeavour was doomed to failure and eventually led the US and Britain to withdraw, to pull out from UNESCO. It was President Ronald Reagan, together with Margaret Thatcher, who redrafted the international agenda then. They brought an ideological shift, an era of right-wing policies that shifted from a public service view of the media and telecommunications to a view that looked at them as a privatized and deregulated industry. Manuel Castells, the Spanish sociologist who is considered as the philosopher of the Internet, describes how the rise of the new right also coincided with the rise of the Internet. He claims that capitalism was reconstructed by taking up the new technologies and coming to terms with ICT in search of a new means of successful commercial activities. Furthermore, instead of a North-South divide, the rise of the network society led to a digital split marked by a divide by the haves and the have-nots. Obviously, in this globalized information age, the have-nots enjoy less economic and political influence. When we look at globalization and the media industries, another key point of discussion is the issue of who owns media structures. James Karin, for instance, wrote that nowadays the issue is no longer simply that the media are compromised by their links to big business, but the media are big business. Moreover, it is noticed that globalization accelerated the concentration of ownership in the hands of a few leading media corporations. Researchers show how difficult it is to keep track of who owns which media and so to be able to decipher important hidden agendas. The American scholar Robert McChesney, author of the book Rich Media, Poor Democracy, noted that the number of global media conglomerates is steadily decreasing. While there is an explosion in the quantity of media outlets, there are fewer global media companies. They are all gigantic and almost all American. It is often claimed that at a global level, competition among rival media conglomerates did not always secure pluralistic viewpoints. Very often, as we zap from one channel to another, we are experiencing more of the same content, commercialized and audience-driven content. You zap from one version of Big Brother to another of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and also to varied formats of the Jerry Springer Show from one country to the next. These concerns are discussed within the EU. The European Parliament referred to risks of the predominance of North American companies and capital in the market and the global spread of media products. There is widespread discussion on the impact of the dominant Western media on indigenous cultures, for instance. Yet, in spite of all this, some claim that we do not need to panic because audiences and publics are not gullible. Research has shown that Western, or rather American, programs, like for instance the famous series Dallas, stirred opposite reactions instead of consent when screened in other cultures, such as in Muslim countries. Authors like John Tomlinson critiques the cultural imperialism perspective. He claims that we should not give the media too much agency. We should not assume that political and economic dominance has an automatic impact on culture. Moreover, we must recognize the importance of a human level of cultural experience in the globalized system.
Thanks, Dr. Kamal Samud. Since you belong to different nationalities and countries, according to your perspective, Ling Jingji from China, what are the influences of Western media in your own country?
There is not so much influence of Western media in China, since the Chinese media is controlled by the government. Western media often respond to Chinese events with a knee-jerk reaction. So, they often take a distorted view of China and fail to check sources properly. For example, Western media often criticize China as a dictatorship society, no freedom of speech, and no attributes of democracy. As a result, the Chinese government has to restrict own media not to broadcast these bad reports to the Chinese citizens, including publication of news, movies, music, etc. When Chinese people can't reach such negative media dissemination, Western media will not influence them.
So, Cristiana Foroggio, from your Maltese perspective, what are your comments?
In Malta, the influence from USA and especially from Italy is large. In Malta, there is a dual system, with both English and Maltese languages press outlets. The population also receives and uses a good deal of neighboring Italian media, especially television programs. However, despite the low quality of Maltese media, the Maltese population still prefer to watch programs in their Maltese language. In fact, 70.8% of the population prefer to see Maltese programs and Maltese TV stations. In turn, Maltese programs are being influenced again, especially by Italian programs like Amici and C'è posta per te. Hollywood films are very much broadcast in Malta, and this also has an influence on Maltese society.
So, you, Ando, from the perspective of Japanese.
In Japan, many Hollywood films are broadcast and are very much competing with Japanese local films. In this decade, the number of mobilizations for Hollywood movies has exceeded that of Japanese movies. I can see Paris Hilton, Britney Spears, Beyoncé, etc. in Japanese fashion magazines, and Japanese young girls imitate what they wear. In addition, Japanese youth tend to put English words into Japanese sentences. This tendency is not only among the young generation. Japanese President Shinzo Abe used 30 English words more than 100 times in his first policy speech.
And Anya Hansen from a Danish perspective.
As has already been mentioned, the influence of especially the United States, but also Britain, has been significant in Denmark, both historically and at present. In turn, the media has had a great influence on almost all aspects of culture. This is due to its widespread presence in all Danish homes, with at least 2 television sets and many more radios. However, the tendency is for the whole industry to have economic goals rather than ideological goals, such as, for example, educating the public. In a sense, since media production is determined very much by audience pools, people are being served what they want, although that very often means that what is broadcast are a replica of North American quiz shows, such as Who Wants to Become a Millionaire, and entertainment programs like Big Brother. In Denmark, satire is a very large industry in itself, such as it is in a very few other European countries. This is an example of how the national character must be reflected to some extent in what we're fed by the media. Otherwise, we would simply not be able to relate to what was going on, for example, on the screen or in an article. This said, I must admit that big budget movies from especially the United States, but also a lot of foreign European movies, are shown in Danish movie theaters and on Danish television, after all. Denmark only has a population of 5.5 million, and we cannot sustain a large media industry. In a sense, Denmark is quite capable of exporting its own productions and professionals in the movie industry. For example, I'm quite sure that some of you must have heard of Lars von Trier or the Danish Dogma movies.
Okay, so are US and Western countries dominating world culture by using media industries?
I think it is a wrong perception that the US and Western media industries are dominating the world culture. We cannot see that cultural globalization is a recipe for American dominance, but it is an opportunity for other cultures and markets to assert themselves, such as China, India, and North Africa. Maybe in 15 years from now, we won't be discussing the domination of the Western media, but the domination of the Chinese media or the Asian media. Soon, we will find that in order to make a hugely successful film, you have to match Tom Cruise with an Indian or Chinese actor.
In a certain way, yes. This is because United States and Western countries make up a very large portion of the world's media industry. Due to the fact that Americans invented the Internet, it is undeniable that for some people, the Internet is seen as another way for Western countries to impose their cultural imperialism. However, in the 21st century, there is a vast number of Internet users from all over the world. The Internet has enabled anyone to create a website and promote their culture easily.
I think the US and Western countries are not dominating world culture by using media industries. Even though the Western media is widely spread, they cannot dominate world culture. Information from Western countries does not always spread, keeping original shapes because of the influence of existing cultures and notions. For example, some expressions or contents of Western media can be taboo in Asian countries. Then, the original broadcast or article naturally should be edited or cannot be broadcasted at all, according to the notion of the destination countries, or those countries receiving Western media can create unique culture by actively evaluating and choosing Western information rather than they passively receive and follow Western culture.
Well, I think the way the question is asked kind of aims at a conspiracy theory. After all, the large media corporations would not do anything that would damage their possibilities of revenue. The media, to satisfy increased individualism, is increasing the number of media outlets, and the specialization of already existing ones. For example, we've seen the emergence of channels, TV channels, only showing animal programs or only music videos. Apropos music videos, MTV has been specializing also through the adaption of local languages. In Denmark, we used to receive the British version of the channel, while now we get our own Danish MTV. Thus, the major fault lies not with the media as an industry, but rather with sponsors, viewers, listeners, and readers. So it's not an overarching Big Brother who one day decided to shape foreign cultures in its own image, so to speak. The increased commercialization of global media can be seen as a sort of continuation of liberal propaganda dating back from the Cold War era. However, one should keep in mind that in some parts of the world, media would very likely not even exist if it hadn't been spread in the slipstream of Western imperialism.
Today we are discussing media and culture imperialism. Here in the studio we have Dr. Brenda Murphy, a lecturer at University in Communications. So are the global Western media a threat to national cultures?
This question assumes that there is such a thing as national culture. I'm not convinced that we can make such a claim. Nation is a complex and much debated concept, and the very idea of laying claim to some fixed version of national cultures is also a very complex claim. The nation is a concept that is relatively young in world history. It is an ideological construct, and it is a political and problematic one, especially if we pause to consider how nations have emerged throughout the world in our contemporary history. The term nation presupposes a fixed or essentialist version of a country, and we have witnessed in our more recent political history how these countries, with their invented boundaries, have collapsed and disintegrated, with a very different variable driving the creations of new country boundaries. And so if we think about culture in any terms, it may be more useful to think about it in terms of race or ethnicity. However, the question is not only about national cultures and whether they exist or not. The question is about global Western media and its threat on culture, however we choose to define it. This returns us to the monumental debate around media. Is the media powerful or is the audience powerful? In other words, can the media affect a culture to the extent that it can threaten or erode local or ethnically rich cultures and replace them with imported global and Western, and some would say American, values? Or is the audience powerful enough to resist the media messages, engaged enough to question and critique the global cultural imagery which is pumped across the globe on a daily basis? To locate the debate, it's useful to look at people like Adorno and Fiske as major theorists. Adorno, on one hand, a member of the Frankfurt School, sees the media as powerful and problematic. He wrote essays entitled The Culture Industry, Enlightenment and as Mass Deception, and just before he died, he wrote The Culture Industry Reconsidered. And both essays referred to the mass media as the culture industry. He witnessed the ever-growing media in the US and he believed that the culture industry was a system by which society was controlled through a top-down creation of standardized culture. He called it a well-oiled machine, producing entertainment products in order to make profit. Adorno was devastated by the reduction of culture to a set of manufactured products, arguing that all products of the culture industry were exactly the same, i.e. they all reflect the values of the established system. And he disputes the argument that media offers a range or a choice. Rather, he argued, something is provided for all so that none may escape. The consumer is not king, as the culture industry would have us believe. It is not its subject, but its object. Adorno's main concern was the impact of this culture industry on society. He focused on the fact that the rubbish on any TV or film production is problematic because it takes up so much time in people's everyday consciousness. Media consumption produces passivity. The culture industry impedes the development of autonomous, independent individuals who judge and decide consciously for themselves. Critical thinking is closed off by mass-produced popular culture and, he says, it produces false consciousness. It's all very damning stuff. Fiske, on the other hand, argues in favour of audience power, and he argues that the audience has the ability to interpret media texts and determine popularity. This outweighs the ability of the media institutions to send a particular ideological messages to audiences. He argues that we can't talk of a singular mask of consumers or audiences, rather a range of individuals with changing taste and shifting set of social allegiances. He says that culture is not manufactured and imposed by capitalists. Culture is a living, active process. It can be developed only from within. It cannot be imposed from without. Fiske was influenced by Michel de Certeau, who talks about everyday media users and how they snatch aspects of the mass-produced media, but they reinterpret them to suit their own preferred readings. And he argues that the media is an enabler of ideas and meanings, promoting diversity, difference that all lead to social change. The criticisms of Fiske are that he's too optimistic, and the criticisms of Adorno are that he's too pessimistic. However, they are two very clear visions of how we can think about the media and the culture industry.
According to your view, it is important to sustain indigenous and local media?
Yes, I think it is very important. Lack of control over indigenous media is a huge threat to native peoples. The use of media would help protect national language, identity, and culture, so that the world will continue to maintain tradition. In other words, media can support national identity and promote the diversity of the world.
Yes, it is important to sustain indigenous media, as a highly uniformed media kills the diversity of culture, of language, and threatens traditions. It is the diversity that makes a country unique. So indigenous media should be there to help to maintain the identity of the country, not to destroy it. In Malta, soaps sometimes make use of dialects. This helps to maintain the dialects of some villages. But despite the importance of sustaining indigenous media, this does not mean that Western media should be limited. Any limitation would be reducing the viewers' rights to see what they really prefer.
I think so too. Because different countries have different cultures. Highly uniformed media can kill the diversity of cultures. Let's take language as an example. In Japanese TV programs, broadcasters speak in standard Japanese. Then many people sensed that speaking in dialect was shameful and stopped speaking in local dialect. This is just a local example, but this kind of decline of cultural variety can happen at national or international level, as UNESCO is setting World Heritage Site to preserve culturally and historically important sites. Unique cultures are international treasure and should be defended. Thus, media should be unique and made based on these unique cultures to preserve them.
I, of course, agree that it's very important to preserve culture and diversity. However, I think within the realm of media, there was hardly any diversity in the sense of the production of media. So maybe it's not so relevant to talk about it only with media. Maybe we should look at the globalization in general.
Okay, so according to many scholars, globalization of the media has a long list of negative effects on world society. Is there any possibility to have a positive effect, such as leading towards a more peaceful world?
In my opinion, the globalization of media would not lead to a more peaceful world. There is a main reason to this. Nowadays, the concentration of conglomeration of media is emerging to control information diffusion worldwide. The government largely influences these big corporations, so they tend to cover hot spots where the government has interests. Let me take an example. Nearly 60,000 people have been killed in Kashmir over the past 10 years. CNN has covered that story only twice, where the coverage of the Israel-Palestinian conflict is continuous. The reason for this is just because America has interest in Israel. So, the media doesn't care about the situation of conflict and just follows the government's interest.
To a certain extent, yes, globalization of media can bring people together. By seeing foreign dramas and programs on television, one understands more the culture of that country. However, I also believe that big media industries sometimes can have a hidden agenda. This agenda could influence, for example, the way news items are selected and portrayed. It could thus happen that people only have access to what the industry allows them access to. A perfect example is when it comes to the war in Iraq. British and American television stations do influence people's mind on the war in Iraq, spreading the notion that they are doing the right thing, They also give the perception that the Muslims' way of life should be changed by means of war.
I think if people from different countries can share same information and enjoy same TV programs from globalizing media, there are more chances to understand each other. For example, by watching American TV dramas, people may come to feel attached to the U.S. and no longer feel like waging war against the U.S. What's more, globalizing media can broadcast brutal and severe pictures of war through international news channels. Media have great impact to shape people's perception through such images. Then people feel solely and become more peace-loving.
I think, as Christiana just mentioned, it is possible that the media selects its news very particularly, and therefore the distribution of all news is rather an impossibility. So in a sense, there's some manipulation of media, and that manipulation, since it's coming from one part of the world, namely the West, will take away the voice of some people that are not represented in that media to defend themselves against any wrong perceptions.
With that, we have concluded today's debate. Thanks to you who participated, Christiana Farrugia, Liu Jingzhi, Yu Ando, and Anya Hansen. Thanks also to Dr. Cameron Samud and Dr. Brenda Murphy for their contribution. Thanks to all those who followed today's debate. Join us for the next program today week that will discuss the far right in the political spectrum.